Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Unrest Podcast, episode 6. We are so excited you're all following along and listening to our scary, spooky stories. Caitlin, Madeline, how y'all doing today?
Well, this episode is brought to you by wine. That's all we're doing.
This episode is brought to you by Hershey's Dark Chocolate.
And my sponsor is cheese. We all have our items of choice for recording.
And we need them this week because it has been a wild week, as you all know.
Yeah, so having two news ladies with me, I have been up to date with all the craziness going on, and especially in Charleston and around that area. So kind of fill us in on what y'all are dealing with.
We had to put off recording for a couple days just because it has been so busy. And thankfully, especially being pregnant, I really didn't want to be out in the protests. Usually I would be first to sign up, but they had me working at the station and I was answering phones. People hate us, you know, the drill. Love hearing that for 8 hours straight on your shift. But yeah, we did get two nice people called and congratulated us on coverage. So honestly, they made it worth it. So I wasn't out in it. Caitlin was, hence the wine. how are you, Caitlin? You haven't really been sleeping. I mean, this has caused some anxiety.
Yeah, I've been having riot dreams and maybe sleeping like 4 hours a night. And then when I wake up out of the dream, like during a really stressful moment, I'm like wide awake and can't go back to sleep.
But it's understandable because we've had both of us have personally had friends and colleagues who've had bricks thrown at them, rocks thrown at them, water bottles attacked. I mean, our friend Karina was essentially attacked with a water bottle. Pretty scary. And then, of course, there's been even worse attacks on journalists. So, hey, it's not about us, that's for sure. But it doesn't surprise you that Caitlin's had some stress and anxiety after being out in the middle of it.
Even at the most peaceful protest, you still kind of are just like on alert just in case things start getting a little rowdy.
Yeah, because you honestly never know. I mean, even at things that aren't protest, anything with a large group of people can turn in a bad direction very fast.
Especially when there's a lot of emotion involved and, you know, everyone's kind of, I guess, agitated and they have a good reason to be. I'm not discrediting that at all. They definitely do. It's just, it puts journalists in an interesting position because, you know, we live in this community, we love this community, and our job is a public service to our community. And it's hard because we feel a bit stuck in the middle. You know, we can't support either side, even though we might feel strongly about one or the other. And we also, you know, aren't necessarily accepted at those events either from either side.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting it from both directions. And
honestly, even 10 years in this business, you're not a robot, you're a person, and you still have opinions, strong opinions, and it can still be hard to not express them. But at the same time, that's what we're trained for. And I know out in the community or at these protests, they'd love us to grab a sign and start marching or to do the opposite and stand next to police. We can't make everyone happy, but it's not appropriate. So we try our very best.
And the whole point of us being unbiased and being trained to be unbiased in that manner is that, you know, you might not like what I'm saying, but that's why I'm focusing on the facts, because the facts are objective.
Right.
And
this is what we see, this is what we hear.
But I think that that's also what kind of the struggle is this idea of media is been so obliterated at this point because of social media, network news, and people just really have a hard time distinguishing what's fact and what's fiction and what's opinion.
What's real journalism.
Exactly. So it kind of makes our job more difficult when we're just out there trying to share the facts of what's going on and kind of take you to what's happening since you're watching it through your TV, when on the other end, people, you know, they might not agree with what's happening and what you're describing, and they think that that's you putting your own spin on it, even if you are working really hard not to do that.
Yeah, I think that's what sucks about today and the media, is because even though I don't work in that area, but I did go to school for it. And they do try so hard to teach you not to to let your views be seen through what you're showing people. But then you have like those, the big networks that are tending to just do that. And you have people who are just hating on the news. I mean, it's like terrible.
It's like, very, yeah.
And convoluted. It's like, well, then don't watch it. Don't watch what you don't believe in, but don't hate on all news, because local news is regular news. Like,
it's not network opinion. Yeah. We're out here. We live in this community. We care about this community, and we have no reason to have an agenda. And we also don't make enough money or have enough time to do any of that.
Right?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
You know, Caitlin had told me she did something when Trump came there and he was like calling them fake news. And I'm like, that's terrible to do, because yeah, there might've been people there that you do consider fake news, but to group you all together and do that is, I feel like it's super damaging to people, especially those type of people who are going to believe anything that he says, you know?
Well, that's one reason we like to continue our travel stories today and just give everyone a little glimpse of happiness. Well, spookiness, I guess.
Yeah. Happiness and spookiness.
We thought we'd take you to the other side of the country, to the bright and sunny world of California.
The best.
I love California. I've only been there a couple times, but I think there is so much more to see.
Just so different than the East Coast. And it's beautiful. I've only been like one time, but I loved it.
You did San Diego. Times.
Oh, yeah. Duh. For your bachelorette party. Forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to talk about that a little
that
bit.
That was an epic party. I mean, I didn't know you, but I would have appreciated an invite at the time.
Shoot, you could have come.
Caitlin planned that thing for so long. It was actually really fun to listen to.
Oh, my God.
Months.
Oh, my gosh. It literally was an epic bachelorette party.
Well, Madeline, you're doing the story today. So what made you choose the story? Give us a little glimpse of where we're traveling.
All right. So today's ghost story comes from one of my favorite places, Hotel del Coronado.
Ooh.
Sounds so fancy, right?
And it is.
It is. Oh my God. When I was in college, I did an internship in LA, and one weekend we went to San Diego and I fell in love. We went to the Del to kind of check it out. And that was the first time that I heard that it was haunted. Carter is going to kind of tell you about the history a little bit of the hotel. But before we get into the haunting, I must tell another story about this amazing hotel.
Ooh.
Yes. So last year I went to San Diego for my bachelorette party, like we just talked about.
This is the best story.
How do you know which one it is?
Trust me, I know. Because I set it up.
Did y'all stay at the Del?
No.
I mean, okay, I didn't think so after looking at the prices.
It's not cheap. Now, what's crazy is back in the day when I tell you this story of how much it cost for this ghostly lady to stay in there, it was $15 a night.
Oh my goodness.
How awesome would that be? But now it is not $15.
I pulled some prices for my history, so it's expensive.
So we went there for my bachelorette party, had an amazing time, and I had looked into some cool places. I had already been to the hotel, but I saw that they had an amazing brunch. And I just mentioned it to Caitlin, like, oh,
that's all she knew about it, is that the brunch was amazing. She knew nothing else.
I just saw pictures of it. I mean, it was like out of this world brunch. And I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing. And so I just kind of showed it to Caitlin. Well, Caitlin, being the best maid of honor, reserved us a table at this extraordinary brunch.
And it was at the Del?
Yes.
Yes.
It was at the Del.
Okay. It's in this room called the Crown Room.
And so Sunday comes around and we walk into the room that is fit for royalty.
I bet.
They said that the chandeliers were designed by the author of Wizard of Oz.
Oh, Frank L. Baum was a visitor.
Yes.
And their crowns. L. That's Frank. Why it's called the Crown Room.
Yeah.
L. Frank, sorry.
It's okay. I didn't know his name. But yeah, so the chandeliers are like these huge crowns.
That's oh my gosh. Wow.
Right? So it's an amazing
place.
So
y'all are feeling fancy when you walk in there.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, then not only do you walk into this beautiful room, you are quickly offered mimosas and Bloody Marys. I mean, all you can drink, and we're grabbing them. We're like,
and y'all, this ain't, this isn't Andre up in there with OJ.
No, Andre, guys, no cooks.
Do you have any idea what prices are plus stuff?
No.
Oh, and so, God.
All right. So we're taking the drinks, and that kind of probably should have been our first inkling that this was going to be a pricey brunch, you know? So we look around and we saw that it's all you can eat. All you can eat. Now they had a sushi bar.
Ooh.
Fresh seafood, crab legs, steak.
Oh my God.
A ramen noodle bar.
And these aren't crab legs that like you would get in Myrtle Beach at the buffet that are like really skinny and have like the tiniest amount of crab. These are like king crab, like as big around as a baseball probably.
Yeah.
Kind of crab legs. Brunch? I have never seen such a thing.
Okay. They have people out there cooking. I mean, you have the regular brunch foods like waffles and pancakes and that kind of thing. Like I said, they have a ramen noodle bar. Best ramen noodles I've ever had.
You went for ramen at the brunch?
Well, I got
it's
everything.
The fancy kind. It's the fancy kind, not the like 13 cent kind. Look,
Caitlin comes back with a thing of cotton candy and a plate of creme brulee.
Oh my God.
I mean, I want the cotton candy, but it just looks so cool.
What is this place?
Okay, so literally anything and everything you could imagine they had in this place. Plus free mimosas, free Bloody Marys. And you could stay there as long as you wanted, pretty much, is what the man told us. But one of the things that Caitlin forgot to ask was the price.
Well, they didn't have it online, okay? And then I never ended up calling because I just assumed, like, okay, it'd be expensive, but
let's
I didn't
just
think
accept it'd
be it. As expensive as it was. I thought maybe like 50 a person, okay?
Which is still a lot for
that's
brunch,
reasonable,
right?
But reasonable
but
for where we were.
All you can eat, and especially alcohol involved,
and,
yeah.
And in a fancy place, I was like 50 for brunch. Like we can all handle that.
Yeah, and so she secretively pulls the waiter aside and says, "You know, like, you know, how much is this?
How much is this shit?"
And he said, oh, it's $100 per person.
Okay.
And all of our mouths drop. We're like, oh.
And so panic starts to set in because I have just asked all these girls to fly from all over the country to San Diego, which is not cheap. They've spent a pretty penny on it. And I'm like, now I'm asking them all to pay $100 for brunch.
Let's just finish off the weekend with $100 and brunch.
So luckily I had a little extra money. And so I kind of helped had the price down, but I have never done something so worthwhile in my entire life. The surfing was up there with it too, but this brunch, I don't even know how to put into words like the feeling.
It was worth every penny of that $100.
So it's safe
to
say that you would pay it again in a heartbeat.
Yes, I would.
Or tell someone if you want to have an extravagant experience, just do it.
Yeah, because honestly, it's not even like, yes, the brunch was amazing and everything like that, but it was also like that experience of kind of like throwing caution to the wind and being like, yeah, I'm going to spend $100 on brunch.
And don't worry, we ate and drank enough that $100 paid for it all.
Oh my God, like I was toasted.
I really want steak and cotton candy now. Dang.
Pregnancy craving.
Oh, that sounds so fantastic. And kind of crab legs. I kind of want crab legs, too.
Can you eat that?
Yeah, as long as it's cooked.
Okay. Oh, gotcha.
And they had these little tiny ice cream cones that were so good.
Did you get more than one?
I just got one, but I was like, they have a selection of ice cream. And, like, you know, all the cones are the same. So it's not like it's pre-made. They, like, scoop it out for you. And
yeah.
And they're, like, fancy flavors, like lavender vanilla or something weird. Ooh. Like that.
One of my favorite pictures is I found some ratatouille.
What?
And so I brought it to the table and I was like, I don't even really want to eat this. I just got it because that movie Ratatouille.
You know, the little chef made this.
I said the little chef made this.
Oh my gosh. Oh man, y'all, that is too fun.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the other girls loved it too.
They did. I think we all really did.
It was one of our favorite parts of the trip.
So yep. Now you can actually say you've been to the Hotel Del Coronado.
Yes. And I had been there before when I went to San Diego, but never got to eat there or anything like that. We just went to look at the hotel, because you can do that, like, even if you're not staying there, because it's such a historical place. So back to ghosts, though, because that is what this podcast is about, not epic brunch places.
Or actually, riots. Has anyone thought about doing that as a podcast?
I don't know. It sounds really great.
We go, we eat, we review.
I started a brunch club when I worked in Wilmington, and it was amazing.
Aren't you cute?
Yeah, Caitlin has always taken me to really good brunch spots.
Okay, Madeline, sorry. Ghosts.
Oh, okay. So back to ghosts. There are a few ghosts haunting around the hotel, but I'm going to focus on one in particular and the most famous one. Her name is Kate Morgan, also known as the Beautiful Stranger. She's haunted the hotel since 1892, so not that long ago. Just kidding. Y'all didn't think that was funny.
I'm trying to take a sip of my wine.
Gosh, I'm not a comedian.
I was muted. I was laughing so hard, though, if you want to
no,
do it.
No, you weren't, because I saw your face. Damn it.
Okay, do it again and we'll laugh.
I'm not going into stand-up comedy.
No, I like this. Leave all this in there.
The story goes that she checked into the hotel under the name Lottie Anderson Bernard and said she was from Detroit. I actually saw a picture of the sign-in sheet, so I'll share that on Facebook. But they said she was very beautiful. She seemed ladylike, whatever that means. But she seemed kind of troubled from the get-go. She told them that she was expecting a guest. Some stories say it was her husband. Others say that she was meeting a lover.
Lover.
Yeah. And some say that she was even pregnant.
Ooh.
For shame.
Yes. However, a few days... Wait, what'd you say?
I said, for shame.
For shame. However, a few days...
Sorry, I have a question. I'm curious if she had a wedding ring on and was married or not.
She was married.
Okay.
Yes. No, she was for sure married. There's so many different turns that the story could take, like, just because it's old. And some people said that her and her husband got in an argument. Someone said that they were con artists. You never really know the truth. But then again, some say that she was meeting up with a lover. Who knows? However, a few days after checking in with no visitors, just a housekeeper that came to clean up the room and draw her baths. For anyone who wants to go visit the hotel she stayed in, it was room 312. Now, currently, it is room 3327. In case you want to go, a lot of people rent out her room. A lot of famous people rent it out. And I guess they want to see a little ghost action.
I'll put that on our field trip ideas.
Yes.
Is that where most of the ghosty stuff happens, is in that room?
It happens all over the hotel, but stuff does happen in that room for sure.
You should just know you have about a 25-second delay from us.
I know. It keeps freezing, and I can't hear you guys.
But we still love you.
Okay.
It's that Union City broadband.
Union Grove.
But it's funny because
the
delay only...
Don't be talking crap about Yadtel. What? That's what the internet's called.
The internet?
What?
The internet's here in Union Grove is called Yadtel.net.
What the heck?
Okay, so this one article I read said that she told the housekeeper that she was diagnosed with stomach cancer. So a lot of stories going on about this poor lady. I mean, she checked in with a different name and she's got a child, maybe, maybe not, a lover, maybe, maybe not, stomach cancer, maybe, maybe not, who knows. But her troubled spirit drove her to taking her own life. She shot herself in the head. Her body was found near the steps leading to the ocean. They say she walked down, looked out over the ocean, and shot the .44 caliber bullet into her head.
Whoa.
Yes. The coroner determined it as a suicide, but there is a lot of skepticism around this. There was another lawyer that got really interested in this case. Sounds a little kooky to me, but he thinks that you know, she has some kind of pull on him. But he came up with a lot of really good evidence saying that the bullet didn't match the caliber of gun found beside her body. And even though he did come up with this evidence, they never reopened the case.
Hmm. Interesting.
Whatever the facts are surrounding her death, though, she has yet to resolve them because she is seen haunting the hotel to this day. Sightings of her both in the hotel, on the beach. They say she's relatively harmless and generally limits her activity to fleeting appearances, inexplainable antics. Some people have seen like a phantom-like sighting down the hallways of the hotel. There's numerous reports of an uneasy feeling or a feeling of being watched, unexplainable breezes, sounds and smells, doors opening, closing. There's a one story of a TV that goes on and off, and that the guest staying in the room that night looked at the TV and saw her face in the blank TV screen. A lot of times the hotel staff will try to always clean the rooms in pairs because they hate being alone in any of the rooms. Like I said, there's other hauntings besides Kate, but she's just the most prolific one that there is at this hotel. Near the stairs where her body is found, it is said that you will be bombarded with these feelings of anguish and lost hope, which is kind of what she felt like before she took her life. Also, people have seen when you look up into her room, the curtains moving. There's no reason for it. Like no one was staying in the room at that time, but they can see it maybe like someone was peeking out of the curtains. I'm going to read from a reporter who talked to a lady who actually stayed in the hotel room. And it says, while she was there, she carefully laid out a valuable necklace in the safety deposit box in the closet. She then took a 3-hour nap. And when she woke up, opened the box, and the necklace was then tied in a knot.
What?
Yes. And then the guy that's writing this said when he stayed in there, he returned to the room after dinner and the key card would not work and wouldn't open the door. He had to go get a new one and he tried at least a dozen times before the door finally opened. He then said he stayed up late watching television, closed the drapes, that the lamp near the window started flickering for like a good hour that night. So he just turned it off. It'll come as no surprise that I wasn't able to sleep much, so I just watched the numbers on the bedside digital clock roll over as the hours passed. From somewhere, I could hear a faint rhythmic murmur, like the sound of someone snoring or slurping through a straw.
Specific?
Yeah, right? Feeling like a haunted room veteran, a week later, I checked into another room on the 5th floor, a much smaller room than the one I was in. It had been the room of the maid who assisted Kate during her stay, and reportedly, after Kate's funeral, the maid was never seen again. Whoa. It was in this room that a Secret Service agent reportedly stayed in 1983 and was so spooked he asked for a room change in the middle of the night.
What?
So,
I bet those guys are not easily spooked.
And then I found one more little article of someone who was there. It said, I had an experience at Coronado as a child, about 8 years old, that haunts me to this day. I knew nothing of the hotel's history when I was stayed there and was 8. I was too young, obviously, to be aware or to be told. I went up to our room to use the bathroom while my family ate breakfast downstairs. And while I was at the sink, the doorknob twisted and began to open slowly. I called out thinking it was a family member, but nobody answered. I was so terrified, I began to cry, and then the door stopped opening. I decided to run and get out of the room. No one had entered the room, but I could just feel a weird presence, and I knew I clearly saw the doorknob move and the door open. It's the most scared I've ever felt.
My gosh.
Pretty spooky. Like I said, there's a lot of different stories about Kate and her mischievous hauntings around the hotel.
Very good one, especially with so many examples.
I like to find, you know, some specific instances where they might have been seen. And it seems like she has quite a few. Like, it's just like a running joke at the hotel when stuff happens. They're like, I mean, that's just Kate, you know?
I wonder if they just hold that room for people that ask for it specifically, or like, if you didn't know anything about it, if you could just like happen randomly to get placed in it. Yeah.
That would be, ooh. Yeah.
Or like, do you have to sign something to be in that room?
Some waiver.
I don't know. They said that it is the most checked out room, especially around Halloween.
Ooh. Hmm.
They probably have so many people ask for it that never have to just place random people in it.
Y'all, I want to go. I want to go. I want to stay in that room. I want to eat that brunch with y'all.
Yes. We should do it. Yep. Let's do it. I'm down. Because it's right on the beach. You can walk right out of the hotel and onto the beach. And they also have like a really cool pier that goes out, and they have like a little restaurant bar right there. It's a beautiful hotel.
And it has a lot of really beautiful architecture. Like, Carter, yeah. You might add some of this in there, but a lot of it's still original, I think.
But I found the story really interesting, and I hate that it happened so long ago, because obviously there is something that, I don't know, like, why did she check in with a different name? Like, I'm just really curious, because it took them a while to even figure out who she was.
I'm almost getting the vibe that that her husband was abusive and she was trying to escape him, and maybe was even going to report it to the police, and that's who her guest was. But then obviously it didn't play out, and maybe he found her. That's my theory.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the hotel. I know we've talked about it, and everyone's going to go eat a $100 brunch there. And so we should get a kickback from that. But
yeah, definitely so. Well, for our spook school today, we're going to stay on this theme of the Dell, because it's just fun to kind of look at the history of this big, beautiful hotel. And it is more than 130 years old. So in America, that's old, you know. In Europe, you got to be like 2,000 years old to be an antique. But here in America, that's pretty old.
Yes.
And according to the website and these stories that you've told, that they've hosted a ton of celebrities. L. Frank Baum, who wrote The Wizard of Oz. Charlie Chaplin. Charles Lindbergh. They've hosted royalty and a lot of U.S. presidents. And when I was looking up, I mean, for decades, they've hosted these high caliber VIPs. So some of the presidents who've been there: Benjamin Harrison, William Taft, Franklin and Mrs. Roosevelt, Nixon had a state dinner there, Jimmy Carter, and Gerald Ford. So that's a lot of presidents and political royalty, I'm sure.
I'm sure that the brunch was not too expensive for them.
No, I'd love to picture Jimmy Carter getting down with some ramen and crab legs.
Cotton candy, maybe.
Oh, yeah. It was built in 1888 by Elisha, I think, or I think it's a man, Elisha Babcock Jr. and Hampton L. Story. Now, Story was already kind of well known for this piano company, this big successful piano company he had. And I found this kind of interesting story about how later he took this big adventurous cross-country road trip to like test out the federal highway system that was being built, and like took a bunch of extra tires and gasoline and stuff. So it's like obviously not as easy as it would be these days. So these are true entrepreneurs, kind of business tycoons, investors. When they bought the land for the Dell, it was $110,000.
What?
Gosh.
Can hardly even find a house for that now.
Seriously, can you imagine? I mean, this beautiful property, waterfront in California, give me a break. So apparently even at one point while the plans were underway, the economy was struggling, money was tight. So he had some friends hop in and invest and help him save it, which I was laughing at the idea of like which friends I would ask if I needed them to hop in and help save me, like with a huge investment.
Right.
I guess it would be you too.
Yes. I'm very rich.
And now, yeah,
we wish.
Us too. And now the Dell is a National Historic Landmark. So it is definitely recognized for its history. They do their own history tours, it looked like, on site, including ones that focus on Kate Morgan and her haunting. Now, looking back to when the resort was first imagined in 1886, you got a picture. I saw this photograph. Picture just complete desert land, sparse bushes scattered about, some water in the distance, and these really pretty mountains that are kind of in the background. So it is a beautiful landscape, but it had to have taken some imaginative people to think we could turn this into a world-class resort.
Right.
It's really lonely looking. And so
you know, within a year, they were developing the island into this grid pattern and construction started. And it apparently was built pretty quickly because the construction was in 1887. The first wedding was that year. And in 1888, they officially debuted the hotel. And like y'all said, just unbelievable architecture, luxury to the max. While I was flipping through some of these pictures, I was thinking of like the Titanic almost, like ornate designs, the metalwork, the beautiful chandeliers, all part of making people feel like they are staying in the height of luxury for $15 a day, as you said.
Right? I would have definitely stayed for $15.
Now that Kate Morgan mystery started, it looks like pretty soon after it opened, 1888, and then she was 1892, is that right? So
right.
That was pretty early on. Fast forward a good 50, almost 60 years later, Marilyn Monroe starred in Some Like It Hot, and that was filmed at the Dell.
That's awesome. Sorry to barge in, but they said that Kate also likes to hunt the gift shops, and that the Some Like It Hot, that memorabilia, will fly off of the shelves sometimes. So she must have really liked Marilyn.
Or didn't like Marilyn.
Yeah, or didn't.
Maybe she was stealing your thunder a little.
Yeah, she's like, this is my hotel, bitch.
Well, fast forwarding to today, they've obviously made some renovations, improvements. There's big cottages you can rent for like your whole family. There's cabanas, there's a village. So it has really grown to be its own little town. It almost looks like, you guys can probably attest to that. And it still looks absolutely gorgeous and very relaxing, about as perfect as a beach resort as you can imagine, but just with a little bit of ghostly vibes.
Yeah, because she stayed in, like, originally it was like room whatever I said, and now it's like 3327, so I'm guessing they added some rooms.
They've added a lot, yes, in different sections. So just for fun, I was looking up, let's say we all wanted to go in August, and they had no rooms available this month or next. I'm not sure if that's because they really are all sold out or if it's maybe coronavirus related, but anyway, looking at August, the cheapest room I could find was $300 a night. Okay, not crazy, but, you know, more than I would usually spend on a hotel. But we are talking about resort, and that's not like a beach view or anything. You could go middle of the road with an ocean view terrace cabana.
Oh.
$800 a night.
Mm.
Or the, you know, we could take the guys with us and rent out one of these oceanfront cottages in the beach village. They have these beautiful villas, soaking tubs, ocean view, full kitchen, the whole deal. Those are $2,600 a night.
All right, sign us up.
So if we'll each cover two nights, you know, that's fine. I have a few thousand dollars.
Give me like 2 years to save up, okay?
Yeah. But it is kind of fun. I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, $300 a night for the cheaper room. Yeah, that's expensive, but it's accessible for people who wanted to go on like a really nice vacation, I guess. So, you know, you might see a good mingling of people. It sounds like it's not only rich and famous there 24/7. And I really don't know if you could go get just for the day and stay at the beach, maybe buy like a day pass. A lot of times, usually you can do that for resorts, like at Atlantis and stuff like that.
I mean, that's what we did. We literally just like
went
for the day and stayed at another hotel down the road.
Something worth checking out if you're ever in San Diego, even if you don't stay there, grab a crab leg.
$100 leg.
$100. Well, that's our history and our spook school for today on the Dell. Great story, Madeline. Thanks for opening my eyes to this whole new history I didn't know about.
Yeah, it's awesome. I definitely want to go visit again. I was telling Matt, I was like, I would love to live in San Diego for real. He was like, no.
It's too far away from everyone we know.
Everybody.
Here.
I will say, when we visited San Diego last year, we were kind of, we don't ever want to leave Charleston, and we love the East Coast, and my family's all here. His family lives in Michigan. That's not an option. It's too cold. But we were kind of looking at each other like, if we were going to live somewhere else, this is pretty cool. This is about the closest I found that I would actually pick up and move to. And I wouldn't really leave my family, but I could see why you would live there. It's amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I fell in love with it. But Also, I would love to live in Charleston too. So,
well, you, anytime,
just come on down.
But I'm up here in the Grove. That's what we call it.
Is that what you said?
Union, the Grove. Union Tell.
The Grove.
Union Grove. Union City.
How many different ways can we say it?
From now on, I'm just going to make up a new name for your town.
Please do.
Well, before we get into our real life spook, Madeline, you got an email from one of our listeners.
I did, y'all. This morning, I woke up really early because I just love to wake up early. No, I didn't. It was really late. And I looked at my phone and I was like, oh, someone emailed me. And so I was reading it and it says, oh my goodness, love, love, love your podcast. I adore Charleston and have been on many tours there. You guys tell a story so well, the history, love it. Thanks for putting this out in the world, even though I will check the showers from now till eternity. So Jennifer, I'm so glad that you love the podcast and I wanted to give you a little shout out for giving us a little shout out.
And Jennifer, don't worry. We also check our showers every night now.
Absolutely.
Showers, behind doors, under the bed.
My friend Libba texts me pretty much every episode we release and is a big fan too. So I love hearing that we're not just putting this out to nothing. So thanks for
each other.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can leave a review if you listen on Apple Podcast. You can leave a review there and give us a rating, which we would appreciate. Or you could email us, of course, at theunrestpodcast@gmail.com. And I think we just got on iHeartRadio's podcast platform as well. So check
No big deal.
We're just blowing up.
Very cool. Very cool.
I was walking down the street here in Union Grove and someone said, do you do the Unrest podcast?
They did not.
I sure as hell did.
They did not.
No, they didn't.
I almost believed you. I was like, no shit.
No one they in wouldn't Union even Grove know even knows like. Our podcast is.
It's like my mom who got her hair all done to do her part. And I was like, did I not mention that a podcast is only audio? I'm sorry, I thought you knew that. No need to do your hair.
So anyways, back to today's real life spook, though. I talked to one of our fellow reporters that Carter and I work with. Her name is Paola Tristan Aruda. And she told me that her entire family kind of has a sensitivity to spooky things. They've encountered quite a few things. And she stayed in my house one night, just having a girls' night, and kind of shared some of her stories with me. Take a listen.
So I was probably in like fifth or sixth grade, and I just came home from school. There was no one else home. There wasn't going to be anyone home for a while. And I just remember going upstairs and getting ready to take a shower. So I go upstairs, I lock the bathroom door, and I turn on the shower. As soon as I do, the bathroom door just starts going boom, 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 like someone's trying to get in. And it happened maybe like 3-4 seconds and then completely stopped. And I know for a fact I was the only person home. And I looked outside. I took a shower. I looked outside and didn't see a single person. And that was probably the scariest feeling, because I thought someone was trying to get in, but it wouldn't have been a real person if, you know, it was 2 seconds and then boom, no one there.
What was going through your mind?
I knew immediately it was a ghost, because as I told you, where I lived, it was a place where I've experienced a lot of paranormal activity. My brother saw a little girl. My mom also had some kind of experience in that house. I just had a bad feeling every time I was there, especially when I was there by myself. I had a feeling that something would happen at any moment. So I just like, I froze. I was like, should I go out? Should I call the police? And then, you know, when I realized that it was probably a ghost, I was just like, you know, I'm just gonna stay in my room until someone comes home.
Did you often sleep with the light on?
I didn't. I tried my best to sleep with the lights off, but I made sure that, you know, my room door was closed. I always had a feeling like I always, this is another thing, I always felt like I heard footsteps coming up the stairs all the time. And, you know, it was kind of the first floor was like just the front door, and there's like a little space to put your shoes, and then you walk up the stairs, and that's like the living room, there's the dining room, like a little second living room, and the kitchen. And then you walk up the stairs, and that's where my brother's room was, right at the top of the stairs, the bathroom. You go down the hallway, my mom's room, and my room on the other side. So I was kind of like right on the other side of the stairs. And so I could always hear, you know, when people were coming up the stairs, and I knew that my mom and my brother were in their room. So I, every time I heard a sound, I'm like, I don't know why I keep hearing sounds of people coming up the stairs. But I was always alert. It was one of those instances where, you know, if I was downstairs and I had to shut off the lights, I would like do it really quick and run up the stairs because I was just so afraid every time I was in that house.
And you were telling me that you feel like your family, that whatever it is, a ghost or whatever, that it's attached to your family, mm-hmm. not necessarily a specific home.
Well, when I was younger, I thought it was, you know, home to home, because my first paranormal experience was when I was in Brazil in, you know, a family home where I would wake up at 3 a.m. and I would, you know, walk out into the hallway and see people walking. And just having experiences like, you know, paranormal experiences in other homes, I assumed it was the home. And then the fact that my family has also had so many paranormal sightings, I just feel like it's attached to my family. Because there's a whole thing in my family where my grandmother was cursed by other people, and they have their own stories growing up of experiences they've had. So I feel like it is kind of attached to my family. It's kind of slowed down now. I haven't had any paranormal experiences in a while. Hopefully I won't ever at this point, but I kind of learned the difference between, you know, I feel like I'm in danger. Like in that house, I felt like I was being threatened. Whereas when I moved to an apartment right after, I, you know, from time to time, I'm like, could this be a ghost? But nothing ever happened. It was almost like coexisting. Like I knew that there was probably some kind of activity in that house, but because they never mess with me, I just, like, you know, I left it alone. So I think there's a difference between, you know, feeling like, oh, I'm scared, like I shouldn't, this thing shouldn't be here, and acknowledging that it's there and like moving on.
And does that more so rely on you or the spirit?
I think it depends. I really do believe it's a feeling. Like if there's something in your house and you just feel like, oh my gosh, this, like I'm scared, but scared to the point where I feel like I need to get out, that's different. Like that old house, my pastor would say that there were evil spirits in that house. So I truly believe that there was something evil, and I could feel it, and I could feel just threatened. Whereas, you know, the other place, I didn't have like a feeling of danger. And so since nothing really like happened, I think that that's kind of the spirit just being like, hey, I'm just passing through. I think there's a lot of instances where spirits just pass through and kind of move on. And it might happen without you even realizing it. I think they're kind of all around us at some point. So it really just depends.
Do you think your family or families in general can be more receptive and sensitive to these kinds of things than other people?
Yeah, I think so. I think it depends on, it really does depend on what you believe, but at the same time, you know, you hear stories all the time of families that either were so religious and this happened, or, you know, are not religious at all and these things happen to them. I think what you should never do is mock a spirit. Even if you don't believe in it, the best thing you can do is kind of just leave it alone. If you kind of do things to say like, oh, ghost, come here, like, that is probably the worst thing you can do because you never know what you're gonna irritate, and that can make it worse. It's one of those things where you shouldn't mock it. If you're doing something, if buying some kind of item that might have some kind of spiritual connotation and you don't know what it means, leave it at the shelf. Do not bring it home with you. And then another thing that we heard other people talk about was naming ghosts. I don't think you should name ghosts, because that is an invitation for them to stay with you. When you tell like a ghost, like, hey, you know, my name is this, what's yours, or like give that a name, you're kind of inviting them to stay in your space. Whereas like if you just kind of leave it alone, then it should leave you alone. At least that's what I think of it, at least.
Whoa. And you've had a lot of experiences.
Yeah, I've had a lot of experiences. My brother has had a lot of experiences. I'm still trying to figure out if this was like me or not, or me or ghost. Because I kind of go back. But that one house that I told you about, there was one time where I fell down the stairs once at that old house. And I'm like, okay, did I fall down the stairs? But I also like felt like something on me. So I'm like, or was I pushed down the stairs? I think about that a lot. I don't know for sure that if I was pushed by a ghost down the stairs, but I felt something as I was like falling down the stairs once. I was fine, but that's happened to me again, seeing that stuff when I was little. Certain sounds, certain like whispers, certain dreams where I feel like they're telling me something. A lot of that, I've experienced a lot of that growing up, and my brother has told me the same thing. My mom has definitely thought that there were things in our house. My pastors have said that there were things in our house, and my grandpa has told me a lot of stories growing up of experiences that have happened to him. So I think it can, sometimes it happens in cultures where like they're more open to that. If you're more open to kind of spiritualism, then you might see it happen more so. But it's scary. It's kind of off on a little tangent, but I had a friend who he converted to like Christianity, and he was in a church of mine, but beforehand he told me that he used to practice witchcraft, and he like, you know, he had apparently they had a cult, so he had like his master that taught him about witchcraft. And he said that he would, when he kind of got the hang of it and got used to like seeing spirits, he noticed how like these spirits were all around people during some times. He told me that one time he went to a movie theater and he sat down to watch it was a scary movie, and with the master. And he said that with the fact that it was a scary movie, he could see like spirits coming like down the walls into people's chairs and all around the people as they were watching the scary movie. And I just remember hearing stuff like that and being so like surprised by it. And I could tell he was dead serious. But you know, it's things like that that you have no idea exist, but they exist, and there's people that practice these kind of things and people that are seeing spirits every day. And so there's a lot more than we know. So I feel like if you don't know it, leave it alone, kind of thing.
You know, I think a lot of people struggle with that, like, especially if they haven't experienced something significant. But for you, it sounds like a true belief.
Mm-hmm. There is no doubt in my mind that spirits exist. Just like Emma said, it was, you know, I think there's a difference between demons and spirits and, you know, ghosts. It kind of depends. And I think, yeah, it's going to be hard for someone who's never experienced something for themselves. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't really, you know, if you haven't experienced something, then that's kind of just on you. Hopefully you never do, because it's not necessarily an eye-opening experience. It's not something you necessarily, I don't, would never be like, oh, I want to see a ghost. Because, you know, people say all the time, oh, I want to see a ghost. Okay, and then you see a ghost. And now, what happens now? Now you're terrified. You don't know how to go from there. So I think people are just so afraid of, like, the unknown that they choose just to not believe it, even though there's tons of people out there that have experienced it, and we're not lying.
Did she feel anything spooky at your house?
No, thank goodness. I was like, just don't even tell me if you do, girl.
I don't want to know. Well, as you listen to that story, if you were picturing a beautiful young lady from Brazil, then you would be right, because Paola is just like the best, the sweetest, and beautiful. That's really cool, Caitlin. I mean, to have your whole family sensitive like that, you would just grow up kind of with a different appreciation, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
And she, you know, she talks about kind of this difference between spooky and evil.
Ooh.
And I think there is, you know, a pretty big distinction.
Yeah. And I don't like evil.
No, yeah. Spooky, I can appreciate. Evil, get out of here.
We're not doing
I don't appreciate.
And you know what? I bet you know it when you feel it, too. The difference.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Now I'm getting kind of freaked out here in the dark.
God, well, turn the light on, you weirdo.
Why do you have the light off?
We'll stay right here. Go turn the light on.
When I first got in here, it was
sunny.
It was sunny outside.
Okay, Caitlin, now disappear.
She's back. Where she kept her headphones on.
Yeah, damn it.
Disappear.
She'll never know.
Idiot. Okay, before we wrap up here, do not forget, for episode 7, we're doing a Starbucks gift card giveaway. And that's for a real life spook that we choose from you. But the only way we can choose is if you send them to us. So
yes,
here's how you can do
it. We're not going to make up our own stories to win the gift card ourselves. Sounds like something I might do.
It's a good idea.
But
we already have
you guys would never know. If Juanita Beeswacker wins the gift card, it's me.
Is that the name you would use to sign into a hotel?
I need one room for Juanita Beeswacker.
Ooh, Carter, what would be your name that you would use to sign into a hotel, your mystery name?
I'd be Evelyn Bradley.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, I'd love the name Kate? Evelyn.
Carter and I, when we first talked about this podcast, we were considering having aliases for it because, you know, we work in news and we didn't want this.
So we originally were going to, yeah.
And wasn't yours Evelyn Bradley?
Yeah, I was Evelyn Bradley, and I forget you.
You changed yours, though, to Kat Bradley.
Kat, that's right, yeah.
And then I was going to be, first we said Joyce Vice, and then that was kind of like a throwback to my nanny. But then I kind of like the name Serena, so I was going to go with Serena Vice.
I do like that.
Serena Vice. All right, let's do it. Let's now
let's redo this whole podcast and use our fake names.
And Madeline, yours was Juanita Beeswacker.
Yeah, I really go along with you guys.
Wow, that really fits right in. Evelyn, Serena, and Juanita Beeswacker. Remember, you guys, please call in, tell your story, email us. We have a voicemail box set up. So the number there is 843-564-2101.
843-564-2101.
843-564-2101.
Oh, no. Damn it. I don't even know the number.
843-564-2101. Don't forget it.
We love it.
Or if you like don't like the sound of your voice, like some people, you can just email us and we'll read it. Just email it to theunrestpodcast@gmail.com. Or some people have been posting their story on the Facebook page or in the Facebook group. Go ahead and join those two. Obviously, we're kind of still trying to get started on every single platform there is. So there's
we
a lot
don't
of
care
ways
how you do it, just do it
with us.
Yeah, if you don't like hearing your voice or typing, you can always send it through Morse code,
telegraph accepted.
Telepathically, whatever you want to do.
Facts. Show up in one of our dreams. That's fine.
I mean, we will take your story any
however
way
you
want
to get it to us.
Yeah. We love you guys. Thanks for listening.
Unrest in peace.